This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck wasn't that his
Liz
name?
Mark.
Liz Mark. Mark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
Well, Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast, coming at you live here late on a Friday evening. The first time in a couple of years, I feel like, Scott Criscola. It's been Friday nights used to be our slot, wasn't it?
Yes. Good evening, JR. Welcome back to the Northeast. I almost said Nutmeg State. You don't want to come back here. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 335 of the Place to Be podcast. And, yeah, I mean, the last time we talked on air, we were doing a little Nitro action.
Was that what it was? I knew it was something.
Yeah, it was a little Nitro action.
It's been forever that I've been in here.
With Steve Willey and Jordan and who the hell? Who was the other Nitro guy?
Glenn Butler.
Glenny Bunn. Can't forget Glenny Bunn. Yeah, and that was the last time we were on. And since then, nothing's changed. How was travailing the Lone Star State, my friend?
It was fun, yeah. I went to Texas for work for a few days. And, of course, no trip for me is without some story. This one wasn't as bad.
No,
I'm feeling good. I pounded airborne in the days leading up to it. So, but I'm feeling all right. Just chugging it down. And, of course, coming home, we're like, you know, it was bad enough I had to fly into Boston and then drive home, which is adds like another hour, 20 minutes to my...
Right,
you know, ride home basically. So, so we get to the airport early, and we're sitting there, and right, maybe like about a half hour before we're set to board, they announced that the pilot's mother had a stroke, and he had to leave, and they had to call in a backup pilot. So I'm like,
no.
You know, I felt awful, obviously, but I was like, come on, it's always something.
Right.
So we had to wait, and I mean, actually, I'll give them credit; they pulled it together pretty quickly. We left maybe like 55 minutes later than we were supposed to, but we only landed about 35 minutes later, so they made up some time in the air. I got to watch Draft Day on the plane.
I hadn't seen that yet.
Actually, I'll put it this way. If I saw it in a theater, I probably would have felt a little like I got ripped off, but like as a plane movie, it wasn't bad. It went by pretty quick, and they moved fast enough. There's no really like down scenes, and you know, Dennis Leary was pretty good as a coach, and Costner was fine. I mean, you kind of saw where it's headed. Anyone who's kind of a football fan, I guess, knew which way they were going to go. But it was pretty cool the way they maneuver everything at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say that. It ate up a good 2 hours for me on the plane.
Oh, good.
Of a much needed. I had a gigantic Wyatt family member in front of me that had felt the need to put a seat all the way back. So
oh, Christ.
Buried into my lap. So that was fun. But anyway. So, yeah, Texas was good. It was. We got really good weather down there. It was cool and breezy, but warm at the same time. So
nice. Where were you?
In your favorite area, Dallas, pretty much.
Ah, Dallas. DFW, the Metroplex. Very nice. A little, I don't know if you were close to Kyle Forchetti. He's near Austin, so probably not.
No, I think it's pretty far. Texas is pretty big. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
I wasn't when I was in high school. College, I wasn't. I was not aware how big it was. So
for a team outing, Scott, we did archery, so that was interesting. Get to shoot some arrows.
Interesting. The doctor's goddaughter, the doctor's daughter, does archery. You two can go hunt for wild.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was
sometime down the line. That's cool.
I was better. I have terrible aim and like stuff like that. Like I'm not a very accurate thrower, and I did better than I expected hitting the target and whatnot.
Good.
Someone with really shit aim.
Wow, a team outing that didn't involve shots or beer or.
Oh, that was after. So they had. This place was awesome though. So we had the archery at the site. At this place, and then they threw us like a barbecue after as part of the package.
Oh, nice!
And it was like legit Texas barbecue. Mm-hmm. You would have loved it. Baked beans baked with jalapeno peppers.
Ooh,
they were really good.
Ooh, that does sound good.
Yeah, and we had a like homemade sausage that they make right there, and chicken, and it was really good. So,
Well, glad you. It's good to have you back, safe and sound. Speaking of flights and airports, JR, tonight's vault. Kind of coincides with you meeting someone in a airport.
It does. Yes, it does.
So we'll you can tell that story later on. But
hey, what is going on here?
You know, I meant to ask you what you thought of your portrayal on the Dustin Diamond portrayal of Saved by the Bell on Lifetime. I wonder what he thought of his performance. That's what I thought. Tonight. Inside the Vintage Vault, Place B Podcast, episode 335. This is not 1985, but on this night, there is a war that'll finally settle the score.
Sorry, he's yawning. Judgment Day!
It's
been a long week.
It's actually the same. I watched it today, and it's the same intro that Taker came out to.
It's like every Judgment Day. Yeah.
Yeah.
The same as every Judgment Day, Armageddon. They have like the same freaking thing every time.
Kids are singing and the same dreadful music. So, no, good music. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you Judgment Day.
It's time to judge. It's the day of judgment for you.
And three. Many consider a very nondescript, forgetful pay-per-view, and there's a couple of moments that are fairly memorable.
I think that describes a lot of the shows we're talking about.
Yes, that is true. That is true. But this...
years here.
Yeah, this one in particular, though, is one not many people probably remember. But there is a close to 5-star match on this card, and two chicks kiss. So, some rewards there. All right, May 18th, 2003. Live from the old Charlotte Coliseum in Flair Country, Charlotte, North Carolina. We've been here, so we don't have to do the particulars. Mm-hmm. Your attendance, 13,000, not bad. Your buy rate, 0.62. And your announcers out in the catacombs, your Raw announcers, good old J.R. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, and at ringside for SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz. Incidentally, J.R.
Yes.
This is the final co-branded secondary show for just under 4 years.
Yep.
So,
we'll
starting
talk
with...
We'll talk about that more, I think, with our next one, what we thought of it. It's... I think it's a good and a bad. It's good in a way because it ends up allowing a lot of guys to get on pay-per-view that may not have, and we'll see that starting with our next few shows. Mm-hmm. On the flippity flip, the roster was getting really thinned out, so they end up feeling like really just extended TV shows with maybe just longer versions of the matches we're seeing on TV. And a lot of the feuds you wouldn't say are maybe pay-per-view quality. So
yeah, there are a few like that. Yeah,
that's
but again... But again, like you said, a lot of it's amazing how thin the roster got in the span of just under 2 years. Because during the invasion, the roster was geeked,
right?
And then
if they had done this in 01 or 2001, even early 02, it works better. But it feels like they did it, and it lasted for a while here. But into 03, we talked about all the attrition at our last show. You know that it's good and bad because it's similar to 96, where they couldn't really evolve until a lot of these other guys got the hell out of the way. And it's kind of happened here where it doesn't seem great for them on the surface, but it kind of is because they're forced now to push new guys, make new stars, et cetera, et cetera. So,
right.
And they have to fill time because now they have a separate brand show. So let's run through the Stephen Sutton case notes here.
Yes.
Sponsored by Clarasil, both the notes and the show. Here are your championship roll call. All the same, pretty much. Brock Lesnar, still your WWE champ. Triple H, still your world champ. Tag team champions, Kane and Rob Van Dam. WWE tag champions, the world's greatest tag team. Cruiserweight champion, Matt Hardy. And women's champion is Jazz. And the vacated Intercontinental title, Scott, back
what?
In the mix.
Yes,
it had been
is.
Inactive for 211 days since No Mercy 2002, when Triple H beat Kane to merge the belts. It was announced on the 5-5 Raw that the belt would be reinstated with a battle royal that would feature only former Intercontinental champions. So we will get to that shortly. We should mention one major injury over the last month. Chavo Guerrero suffered a torn tricep on the 5/13 TV taping.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yes.
Let's see here. TV by the numbers. Raw has surpassed 520 episodes, Scott. SmackDown 196 and Heat 247. TNA is at their 45th pay-per-view. The 5/12 edition of Raw marks the final appearance of a certain legend, Hall of Famer, who plugged a book, and his final words were, "Devon, get the tables." Do you know who that was, Scott?
I believe it was Classy Freddie Blassie.
That's correct. He came in, he was a wheelchair, and he helped the Dudleys, and plug in his book, "Listen, You Pencil Neck Geeks," and he would pass away a month later. So he got one line. And a guy that did pop up quite a bit on TV on and off, whether it was narrating video packages and everything
right.
else.
Intro, pay-per-view intros and such. Sadly, though, it will not be the last death we mention this evening. Okay.
One last time, Scotty.
Yep, the coach bag.
Unless we bring it back for the 05 version of the team, but
good.
So Road Warrior Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom, actually showed back up on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They popped up on the May 12th Raw and challenged RVD and Kane as a surprise. A fun little match. RVD and Kane would win. And people started getting their hopes up a little bit. Thought maybe LOD would stick around for another run.
I did. Yeah.
And unfortunately, they did not. And then later that year in October, Road Warrior Hawk will pass away, pretty much due to years of drug abuse and steroid abuse.
Yes.
Just wore him
yep.
down. So this is their final appearance on TV. Scott, they had 476 matches in WWF. TV record was 93, 28, and 3. So pretty solid.
Good.
I think a lot of those losses probably came in the last like 6 months or so.
Yeah, to the they were all to the New Age
Outlaws. Yeah, pretty much with the Godwins.
Yeah.
You want to take a minute to talk about your voice?
Well, before we get into my eulogy, I just want to say that it's funny we mentioned that because I was listening back to a an old vault, and you and I got into a very heated debate at Unforgiven 98 about LOD and the New Age Outlaws in that match. So it was a very good debate. Listen back. It was episodes in the 170s. A good debate you and I had about it. But look, I'm not going to lie. We talked about it extensively many, many times. My favorite tag team of all time. I did not like their late WWF run. It was sad. I didn't like the whole, you know, Hawk was drunk and trashed and putting his, you know, his pads on backwards or whatever. And that was disturbing. I didn't like that. But I did like their, obviously, their early run in WWF. And, of course, I loved anything they did from 83 to 89. They were the prototypical tag team that all Haas tag teams after that would follow. Because they were a big man team that, unlike teams like the Blackjacks in the 70s and the Valiants and the Samoans, they were very mobile. They had aerial maneuvers, but of course they focused on their power, and nobody could clean out jobbers like they did, except maybe Sid in 1992. And you know, they'll still go down as my favorite tag team of all time. And but sadly, I wasn't surprised when I found out Hawk died, because we all knew that he was destroying his body over many, many years. And I read, I thought you did, JR, but if anybody who read Road Warrior Animal's book, he pretty much documents it extensively, that Hawk was just a train wreck, just waiting to drive through a brick wall. And he did, sadly. So, in fact, at Slamboree 93, which I watched a couple days ago, Tony and Jesse talk about Sasuke teaming with Hawk in Japan as like the Road Runners or the Blade Runners or Hellraisers or some weird name in Japan that kind of like the faux warrior kind of thing. But anyway, I won't belabor it. It was just sad, but a great run, greatest tag team of all time in some people's eyes, at least top five to many, top three. And that's it. That's the end. We'll see Road Warrior Animal again.
Yes. But, yeah. Definitely will.
We'll see Road Warrior Animal again, but we will not see Hawk on camera again after May 12th, 2003.
All right. So,
kind of a bummer.
And we had another legend pass away. A rough month here in May. Miss Elizabeth.
Ugh.
Age 42 passed away.
Ugh.
With, of course, was basically shacking up with Lex Luger and got pilled up and wind up and ended up, sadly, tragically dying at a very young age. It sucked, of course. Liz was the one woman everyone kind of looked at as like the kind of true classy icon of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
To see her, first lady. To find out how she ends up dying. You know, you just never pictured that happening.
Right.
And, of course, they ended up having the infamous episode of Confidential where they basically blamed everything on Lex Luger and her going to WCW, basically said it killed her. It was really way out there, the whole thing, and just trashed Luger on that. Blamed him for everything. So another sad passing there. And we'll be talking about her quite a bit, I think, when we do our Nitros as we move into 96.
Yes.
Also, in this busy, busy month, Scott, on 4/28, before Raw, in a dark match, John Walters.
Who?
Lost to Aaron Stevens.
Hmm.
You may have seen that match before, if you were a fan of Killer Kowalski's wrestling school. And Aaron Stevens would go on to become, of course, Idol Stevens, and eventually Damian Sandow.
Right.
On the 5-1 SmackDown, Johnny Boy teamed with Aaron Stevens to lose to the world's greatest tag team. And prior to 5-5, he lost to Stevens again in a dark match.
Hmm.
Also, the next week, a guy named CM Punk participated in some dark matches.
Interesting.
Yeah, so. I remember those matches with John. I have the World's Greatest Tag Team match on, I think I have it on tape still somewhere. And I thought that was Velocity. I'll have to check.
I thought it was Velocity.
I'm pretty sure it was Velocity.
I think it was Velocity. Yeah.
So I know I have that on there. So anyway, all right, we're rambling. International Heat, Jazz beat Jacqueline, Storm beat Joey Matthews, Maven beat Steven Richards, Rico beat Spike Dudley. On the pay-per-view version of Heat, the Hurricane defeated Steven Richards. So, Scott, as was evident with the year before, in 2002, remember I talked about being on vacation in Florida, found out the British Bulldog had died, got the results on the phone. A year later, we went back to Naples, pretty much almost the same week.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a layover in Charlotte, and it happened to be, I think it was the day after the show. Or was it the day of? I can never remember.
I think you said the day after.
Right, the Monday.
Monday morning.
Either way, it was either Sunday or Monday morning. And I ran into the Big Show in the food court. And I kind of hoped I'd run into someone because I knew, obviously, the pay-per-view was in... No, it was the day of because I said good luck tonight. I remember saying good luck tonight.
Okay.
It was the morning of. So I had a feeling we may run into someone since they'd all be coming in. So very cordial. He looked pretty tired. It was really early in the morning. And I just went up and said, can we take a quick picture? So this is before phones and selfies and everything else. So my wife just snapped one with our disposable camera. From across the food court, I said, good luck tonight, Mr. Show. And he kind of gave me a little nod, and it was off on his way. So that was my memory of Judgment Day 03.
There you go.
That's it.
Okay. Now, before we get to the matches, JR, we got a little bit of a management shakeup on the Red Brand. Why don't you give us a background on that?
Yeah. So Eric Bischoff continued to abuse his power as a general manager, and something needed to be done on the 4/28 Raw. Linda McMahon pulled up in a limousine and headed to the ring. She said that something needed to be done to correct the corruption on Raw. So Linda said the board of directors met and decided that Bischoff must now share the general manager duties. And out came the now retired Stone Cold Steve Austin to a big pop. Bischoff got stunnered right out of the gate. The following week, Austin made it clear that he wanted to rehire Jim Ross. But Bischoff came out with Chief Morley and refires him. They go back and forth until finally making a match between Jerry Lawler and Morley for JR's job. After Lawler defeated Morley, JR got his job back. Austin stunned Jonathan Coachman, who went out the door, and a furious Bischoff fired Morley for blowing it. So, a lot of a clusterfuck there. The night after Mania, Steve Austin had come to the ring and admitted that The Rock was better. He asked The Rock to come out and shake hands, but instead Bischoff appeared. He announced he was suspicious of Austin's motives and had discovered a secret about Austin. The secret was that his own doctors were telling Austin that his back is screwed up and he wasn't cleared to even wrestle at WrestleMania. Austin denied it and claimed he wanted to keep wrestling, but Bischoff fired him for lying. And, of course, that firing would pretty much end his career due to the neck injuries that he had sustained all the way back in 97. And, Scott, that still to this day, WrestleMania 19 was Steve Austin's final match as we record this here.
Yep.
We're
on 11 and a half years now.
Yep, September 2014. So there's rumors that this may finally be the year. We'll see.
I know. I saw those rumors today, yeah.
But for now, anyway, that was his final match, and here he is as GM. Did you like the idea of keeping him on the screen, keeping that star power in the mix? Did he seem like a role suited for him?
Yeah, I think so, because like we talked about, we're going to get into, the roster was thinned a bit, and you know they needed to make some new stars. So if you were going to keep him on camera, it didn't hurt to at least have him in a GM role. And I think you knew, because Austin had kind of changed his personality, he's more of a comedy babyface. So I think that helped the yin and yang with Bischoff, and I think you knew it would lead to good on-air chemistry. They seem to have gotten along pretty well. So I think it was smart. I think it was smart because, he wasn't clocking up cards at the time, and, there wasn't any issues with that. So I had no problem with it. I think it was good to give Raw a little bit of – considering the in-ring quality of Raw at the time was a little suspect. It probably could at least keep the star power on the show in decent shape. So I had no problem with that. So there you go. Austin and Bischoff, co-general managers, as a matter of fact.
And he opens the show.
Yes.
And he seems refreshed.
Yep.
Pretty relaxed, kind of. Maybe the neck and in-ring stuff is behind him. Doesn't seem as wound up as he was through his last year or so.
Mm.
Kind of just introduces himself and says he's going to watch the show up in the upper deck skybox.
Yes, his own box.
Yeah, so I wanted to make a point now. I forgot what it was. Oh, well.
Anyway, his skybox, while you're thinking of your point, his skybox was loaded with tall boys of Miller Lite.
Yes, it was. So. It's fine. The other thing I wanted to mention quick is that, do you think it was weird Goldberg's not on this card?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You think they're just trying to keep him fresh, or do you think...
No, I don't think there was any ulterior motives in terms of the reaction he got at Backlash, but... I know he would come back and anchor part of the next pay-per-view when we do get the split. I don't know. There probably was nothing for him to do. I mean, he could have showed up in the skybox with Bischoff or something. I don't know. You're not with Bischoff, but I mean, in those skits. I am surprised he was off camera. I don't necessarily
think he's not even mentioned.
I know. It is
completely off the radar.
No, I agree with you 100%.
It's almost like they wanted to reboot him after the Rock thing and then kind of start fresh or something.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I don't think the not having him in a match is not a big deal, but to not even like show him
or even talk about him
or even mention him, yeah, that's a little weird. Yeah,
so.
That changes. I think the next night on Raw, when they start pumping up the next show, I think they finally get it back. But yeah, it is a little weird. Like I said, I feel like Raw took a huge backseat on this show.
Yeah,
huge backseat to
maybe
SmackDown.
They knew the first split brand was going to be Raw.
True.
So they knew Raw was going to get the sunshine in the next month. So maybe they figured, okay, we can.
And if you look at the two title matches, I think it was pretty clear which one needed to be the main event.
Right.
So I don't think that was a genius move. A genius needed to figure that out. So
let's dive into this one.
Let's go in. We begin with a pretty stacked in terms of cool characters. JR, six man tag here. This is from SmackDown. A pretty wild. Team of John Cena, still fully heel, with a pretty good he had a great rap at the start of this match talking about his Italian sausage. I miss that John Cena. An awesome.
So you miss John Cena talking about
Italian
sausage?
No, I miss John Cena's cool raps. I was going to say, God, I miss John Cena's heel sausage. No. I was not finishing that sentence because it was not going in the open. No, I wasn't finishing that sentence because that was not going in an open. So, it was just a good rap. But a couple guys here, JR, that was an awesome stable. Not exactly the exact stable that they had in ECW, but just as good. I just saw Captain Lou on my screen, and he's about the same size as Art O'Donnell. So, JR, tell us about Cena's partners.
All right. Cena is teaming with the FBI, the full-blooded Italians,
hey.
Comprised there of Johnny Stamboli and Chuck Palumbo, managed by Little Guido, known as Nunzio. We've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So Stamboli was one of WCW wrestlers that Vince had brought in after purchasing the promotion. He debuted in 1999 in WCW as one half of the Mafia-themed tag team, the Mamma Lukes.
Lukes.
Bounced around the hardcore division, hooked up with the Natural Born Thrillers until WCW went under. Made one appearance as a member of the Alliance before being sent to developmental. He returned on the big time on 6/30/02 Heat. And on the 7/15 Raw, he actually defeated Bradshaw for the hardcore title. That reign was short-lived as Bradshaw defeated him the same night to win it back. On 7/29, he beat Jeff Hardy to again win the title. However, he lost it back to Bradshaw seconds later. After that, he spent most of his time on Heat, where the fans got behind him and turned him face. On the 2/13 SmackDown, he showed up alongside Nunzio and Chuck Palumbo to attack Rikishi, now known as the FBI. Now, Nunzio, pretty familiar face in the wrestling world. Prior to joining WWE, Nunzio had plied his trade in ECW under the name Little Guido. Been there since 1995, started under the name Damian Stone, but was quickly rebranded. Joined up with the Comedy Stable, the full-blooded Italians, original version, along with Tracy Smothers, JT Smith, and Tommy Rich. In 1999, he quit playing the comedy role and took on a more serious attitude with his heavy Big Sally Graziano. Eh?
Sally Graziano.
All right. Backing him up, Guido was involved in some intense feuds and classic matches. He would begin to team with Tony Mamaluke, and they would become one of the final tag teams to hold the ECW championships. Guido stayed with ECW until it folded in 01, bounced around the indies, had a little run in Ring of Honor, was then signed by WWE in 2002. Guido debuted under the name Nunzio, portraying Jamie Noble's cousin. On the 12/12 SmackDown, he attacked Crash Holly. The cousin angle quickly disappeared, and Nunzio reformed the FBI in February 03. Since the formation, they did their best to be a thorn in the side of The Undertaker at the behest of Mr. McMahon. They would constantly interfere in his matches and even cost him the championship tournament match with John Cena before Backlash.
That's right.
Speaking of Cena, on the 5/1 SmackDown, he came out to cut a rap promo. He was quickly interrupted by a guy named Spanky. We'll talk about him in a second. Mm-hmm. He told Cena he wanted a battle rap. So he drafted referee Brian Hepner to providing a beatbox for his background, and Spanky delivered a great rap, and angry Cena attacked him and dropped him with a newly christened FU, which is a Death Valley driver. Later that night, Palumbo and Stamboli picked up the tainted tag team win over Benoit and Rhino. A week later, Rhino beat Cena thanks to an assist from Spanky, and finally in 5/15, Cena took on Benoit, but lost by DQ when Nunzio interfered. A huge brawl triggered the match, and they set up this here, so I guess we should just talk about the face side since I pretty much revealed it all. Yes. Who are those three men, Scott?
The three men, the two you already know, of course, Chris Benoit and Rhino, but give us a little background on this Spanky character.
Brian Kendrick had began his career in 1999 by attending Shawn Michaels Wrestling School. He was given the name Spanky and his professional debut in October of that year. After a year, he was signed to a developmental contract by WWF. He was there until MCW closed, and Kendrick was given his release. Bounced around the indies, seeing his greatest success in the fledgling Ring of Honor promotion, along with 0-1. He resigned in WWE in late 2002 and made his TV debut on the 1903 Velocity, wrestling under a mask that promoted a local sports team. He did this for a few weeks until he was utilized by Paul Heyman in his feud with The Undertaker, when he portrayed the singing telegram delivery man.
Mm-hmm.
After that incident, Kendrick began trying to win over Stephanie McMahon to earn a contract. He had a memorable night with Sean O'Hara, convinced him to streak through the arena. Kendrick would finally earn that deal, and his nickname would become known on the May 1st SmackDown. You can read more about Kendrick's 02 Ring of Honor run with Brian Bayless's reviews on the website.
Yes. Yep.
Pretty good stuff. You can catch up in Nunzio as well in those early days. So, I like this opener, Scott. Like you said, it was pretty interesting. Cena is bumped down to the opener, but I think he's still positioned pretty strong, gets some promo time to open. I liked that the FBI, I liked their role on SmackDown where they had been kind of fucking with The Undertaker. It made them seem pretty important.
Right.
Benoit and Rhino still teaming since Mania, and a good spot for Spanky here as well. FBI were put over well as a strong unit, and they're tough because of the unity. So every time the faces, we get some momentum, they work together as a heel unit to take control.
Mm.
Good heat segment on Spanky, and I thought it was good to have him bump around for all the power offense. Pretty good heel teamwork for the win. Spanky can eat the loss, no problem. And it puts over the FBI strength with numbers again. So I like this as an opener. I thought it was good FaceTime for Spanky, good FaceTime for Cena. And I thought Benoit came off like the alpha dog in the match. So he felt like the veteran playing with all the rookies and the kids in this one, even though it wasn't completely the case.
Right.
I liked his role in this.
No, I agree 100%. The one thing I'm gonna mention a lot tonight is the formatics of this show. I feel like the... the bookers kind of knew who they were working with on that night, so they knew what matches needed to be a little longer, what matches needed to be a little shorter. This one was barely 4 minutes, but it was a decent little opener. Guys moved around. I did feel this kind of already. I think it's just the way that John Cena carries himself, and of course we'll, you know, exemplify this over the next, you know, 11 years, but he definitely you know, carried himself as a veteran, even though he was really not. He barely was there a year, but he already felt it, and I think that was, I think being on SmackDown helped that. I do like the FBI. I do miss Sally Gratz. I wish they had found Sally Gratz to join the FBI. Where's my pizza? And, you know, I thought it was pretty cool. So it was a great match. I enjoyed the back and forth. I feel like Benoit kind of got – do you feel Benoit's getting kind of lost in the shuffle?
Overall, yes. I mean, when you look at where he was after the Rumble and No Way Out, I think he definitely has taken some steps back. Now, I think even in these matches, he's still pretty focused on. He feels like a big deal. He doesn't feel buried in the matches, but on the overall picture, the overall card, he does.
Yeah. That changes on SmackDown as the calendar year progresses. It doesn't feel that way. It did feel that way since he lost to Kurt at the Rumble. I felt like he got shunted down.
Well, no, of course, even No Way Out, he was still up there.
Yeah.
It really wasn't until the build to Mania where it's like they kind of, you know, I don't know if that story's true or not, but it seemed like maybe they didn't know what they were going to do with him leading into Mania in case he had to step in the last second for Angle. So he kind of, and then since then, he's just kind of been lost in the shuffle just a bit. I don't think he was even at Backlash, right?
No, it wasn't a Backlash.
So we'll see how he continues to roll here with SmackDown, but it'll be interesting with these single brand shows. But yeah, I think he, overall picture, yes, he's lost a bit, but I think he's still, when he's in the ring and he's focused on, he's not forgotten or talked over. He's still pushed when he's in the matches as a star in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But
right,
overall in the picture, it doesn't really seem to back it up.
Yeah, no, that's, I felt the same way. I felt the same way. He seems so, you know, maybe the most talented guy in the company next to, well, there was a lot of guys on SmackDown like that, but he might have been number two behind probably Brock. And here he was kind of in a nameless, faceless six-man tag. Although I found it very entertaining. It probably could have used a few more minutes, but there was a lot of fluff on this show. So a lot of matches. I think that was another reason for Formatics. It seemed like there's a lot of short matches on this show, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that there was so much of that, you know, the Bischoff Austin stuff in the box, and then we had a non wrestling segment a little bit later on in the show. Excuse me. And but still, though, it was fun to see these six guys. I like Stamboli. I like Chuck. I think Chuck Palumbo successfully shook off Billy and Chuck, and he's kind of in this, you know, tough guy Ginzo role with a cigar in his mouth. And I was a big Nunzio guy. I wish he was a little Guido. The only bad thing was I wish they all kept their ECW names. I wish they were a little Guido and they could find. We could find Sally Gratz. I think he would have been a pretty fun addition to the faction. But otherwise, pretty good match. Pretty good match. And yeah, the heels winning doesn't do anything for anybody. So, and Spanky eating the pin, I agree with you on that, doesn't really hurt anybody. So,
and good for the FBI. So, all right, we head up to the Skybox where Austin is eating and drinking. Eric Bischoff shows up and they bicker a bit and they're pushing the 50-50 stuff, how they're, you know, dead equals and as GMs and neither guy has more stroke than the other. Bischoff wants a martini and then he asks for some scotch. Austin just pouring sweat here. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
Probably because he hustled up there after he was in the ring, but he is just like drenched.
Yeah, yes.
He smashes a cup of beer and it splashes all over Bischoff. So this will start the constant torturing of Bischoff on this evening.
Of Bischoff on this show with his Austin's wall of Miller Lite tall boys. Forget Clearasil. This should be sponsored by Miller.
Right.
All right, our next match, JR, includes a debut, sort of.
One of my favorite mid-aughts theme music.
Yes, I have to agree. And probably my brother's least favorite tag team ever. But he hated them so much. But what a great one of the guys we've seen.
Whenever I hear this, I just picture the Dupree dance. The Wetzel's what? Pretzels dance.
The Wetzel's pretzels?
Yeah, the French.
The Wetzel's tickler.
The French fry tickler.
Wetzel's tickler.
He still eats French fries and grilled cheese. It's like every now and then he pops up in my recommended friends on Facebook that I should ask to be friends. And like he still has posts about eating grilled cheese and French fries.
It's and mac and cheese. Joke. Oh yeah. And I haven't worked with him for 2 years. And I still sit, and we all still know that he eats pretzels and cheese. Okay. We're talking, of course, about one of the kind of the coolest heel teams for the next, what, 18 months or so, and that is La Resistance.
La Resistance. After weeks of vignettes airing, Sylvain Grenier and René Dupri made their first appearance on the 420 at Raw as the team La Resistance by attacking Scott Steiner. Steiner had made remarks 2 weeks earlier comparing France to hell, and Grenier and Dupri were offended by the comments. Dupri grew up in wrestling, as his father, Emile Dupri, was a promoter in Montreal. He actually made his first on-camera appearance, the Raw the night after WrestleMania 18, when he mocked Chris Jericho for losing the title to Triple H. So Grenier, of course, had been the crooked ref that we'd seen at No Way Out in WrestleMania, went away for a few weeks, and now started doing those weird like news, world news vignettes where they're sitting at a table trashing America. Yes. And of course, this all stems from France refusing to get involved in the war in Iraq. And being called out as pussies by Scott Steiner. They had that epic debate, and Steiner just trashing France was a pretty entertaining TV.
Yes.
Speaking of Steiner, who are their opponents?
Their opponents are the aforementioned Big Papa Pump and Test. Yeah, Big Papa Test. Pump, too.
Test. Hell's a Test. After all the backstage shenanigans involving those three, Test, Scott Steiner, and Stacy Keibler, a backlash, Stacy decided to team up the two. They reluctantly debuted as a team on the 428 Raw, defeated Chris Nowinski and Rico. La Rez came out to interfere and got a Steiner beatdown. The following week, Test and Steiner got a World Tag Team title match, but Test accidentally booted Steiner and they lost. On the 512 Raw, Test, Steiner, and Goldust defeated La Resistance and Nowinski, Chris Nowinski, in a six-man tag team match. All right, what did you think of the French gimmick? I mean, did you feel like it had legs outside of the war stuff, or was it just another ham-fisted, jingoistic rah-rah?
A little of both. I mean, any team...
I mean, the French are hateable, right? I mean, that's...
Oh, incredibly hateable.
I don't want to get called out as an anti-Frenchite, but it was...
No problem being called out as anti-French, so don't worry about it.
But they are... I mean, they're hateable anyway, right? So it's not like we needed them to puss out of the war to do this,
and
right?
And they didn't have that suave... I mean, let's be honest, JR. La Rez is La Rez, but... They're not the Rougeaus, right?
Well, they're French Canadian,
right? But they don't have that cool aura like the and they are certainly
well.
Not
that's the Canadian mixed with that pulls the French towards the middle a bit,
right?
That regulates it. Like
they're not the cool.
Frenchie Martin's one of the few French Canadians that didn't get the Canadian effect to fix him. But straight French, we haven't really had like straight French guys in WWF. I don't think. Right? I can't remember off the top of my head.
No, I don't think so either.
And Rick Martel liked to go to France to model.
Spain. Yes, even though he was actually from there, but then he said he was from Cocoa Beach.
So, you know, they had a good look, solid heat. Steiner's rants were the highlight of all this. Stacy still standing behind Test after all the nonsense, puts him with Steiner and convinces the both of them it's a good career move. The story here is that Test is weary and jealous, and Keibler is some kind of marketing guru, apparently. That's what they kept talking about in commentary. Steiner lights up Dupri early with chops and strikes, just mows right through him. What did you think of La Rez's tights? I thought they were goofy and indie looking. They were like these thin black tights with these weird yellow tassels.
Yeah,
but they were like super thin tassels.
Yeah, and they were like really big bulky boots and these big yellow like elbow pads. It looked like they just bought all their stuff at the store the day before, like that night. It was really weird.
Jolter at WrestleFest 1 looked more intimidating than these guys here.
Jolter at the NWO Arena Rumble looked more intimidating. So.
La Rez gets a brief offense in, but Steiner fights right back through it. Test cleans house after a hot tag. And then we get this brutal, awful, awkward, contrived setup where Tess knocks Stacy off the apron and she falls into Steiner's arms. Tess gets all mad. It is just really poorly set up. She's like, Tess is like waiting for it and Steiner's just standing there. It's just really awkward and obvious what they were doing. La Rez basically just gets jobbed out. Only got a little bit of offense. Tess wipes out Steiner by accident and La Rez gets the win, but only because Tess fucks up. I thought they looked like clowns otherwise. I thought this whole thing was a mess.
Yeah,
and I thought Test and Steiner could have been a solid team if they let him run for a bit and then started the split, but they had him like against each other immediately. So Stacy tries to tend to Steiner, but Test doesn't want her to and drags her off. So this is all storyline, and I don't think La Rez was the team for this spot. Like, if you wanted to do this angle and you wanted to focus all on Stacy and Steiner and Test, like, why waste La Rez here and make them look like jobbers and to
you
have him steal
you
a win?
Had a, you like, should have had the title match. could have had RVD Kane here, just make it a title match. What difference does that make? It's not going to hurt RVD and Kane any.
Right, or anyone. Bring LOD for the one last pay-per-view match. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like anyone. I mean, they could have found, they could have thrown a team in here. It just seemed like stupid to, you're trying to build this top heel team up and you job them out, basically. You know, they only win due to a screw up and the whole focus is on the other team. It's just, it seemed like a weird spot for a team that they had high hopes for.
I agree 100%. Yeah, this match is a hot mess.
What did you think of that contrived bullshit on the apron?
Oh, it's a bunch of crap. I just saw it a minute ago. I have disc two in the event center tonight. I have disc two of the tag teams DVD, and they're focusing on the Dudleys. And right now, the Survivor Series 01 match is on, and they just showed that it was the whole. They're fighting the Dudleys are fighting the Hardys, or it's a singles match, and the same thing happened. Somebody bumped Stacy into Matt Hardy while Lita is like jaw jacking with him.
But
it's
even
like,
not even that storyline part. I'm talking about the bump itself was
the
awful.
Bump itself is terrible.
Like
yeah,
like he's clearly standing there waiting for it.
Yeah,
and he like just pushes her, and like it's so obvious. It's
pretty
awful.
Yeah, it's pretty piss poor. Yeah, it just I think Testin Steiner would have been. Look, if Steiner's not going to be a main event player because he's a out of shape mess, might as well put him in some kind of tag team. Maybe have him feud or you know with another team.
Yeah,
maybe
I think
get a shot at the tag straps. Just do something with him.
I would have turned him. I would have turned him heel, and it's had him and Test become a tag team. I think that's where his any kind of salvaging would have been done with him. I thought they could have been a pretty good team if they kept them together for a while as heels. He had every right to turn heel. Pissed off at the world.
Oh yeah, of course.
But
I
that we'd lose his rants against the French. So
well, that's true. And I don't think I disagree with you slightly in the sense that I don't think La Rez looked that dreadful.
They got, like no offense in. They didn't look bad in the ring. They were booked poorly.
Yeah, well, okay, well, that's different, yeah.
No, they wrestled, like, they were fine wrestling-wise. I'm talking about they look like fucking chumps. Like, they just get their asses kicked the whole match.
Yeah.
And they barely win only because the other team screwed up. Like, they got, like, maybe, how long was this match? It was
6:19.
Okay. I mean, could they have more than, like, 45 seconds of the 6:19 on
true.
Offense? I mean, I don't think
true.
So.
Yeah.
And they were completely an afterthought to the other stuff.
Yeah. No, that's true. I agree with you on that. But they do win. And they do get on the road, and you can clearly see, oh, this is the next heel team that's going to win the tag titles. It was, I mean, you could see it as clearly,
or at least be
in the
primed
in
for it. You know, sometimes they'll have plans for these teams and they'll fall apart. But it seemed like yes, they had high hopes for them. So next we go backstage where Gregory Helms, mild mannered reporter, is interviewing a masked man named Mr. America. We'll talk about him in a minute. Mm-hmm. Funny wink wink bit where they're both trying to reveal who the other one is.
Yes.
Obviously Helms is the Hurricane and Mr. America we'll talk about in a minute, but mm-hmm. I thought this was pretty funny bit.
Oh no, it was definitely funny, and I think this is now where you start seeing the real comedic entertaining sides of Gregory Helms.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, a guy that was very useful in kind of these, mm-hmm. you know, mid-card kind of spot fillers. Yeah, it gives you a good chuckle. All right. Match of the night, and the match that ended up getting the most time is for the other tag straps that weren't defended. The WWE tag team titles, the blue belts are on the line in a ladder match. Your champions, technically still called Team Angle. I don't believe yet that they were called
Correct.
The world's greatest tag
no,
team.
No, they yet. Don't change until after Angle returns.
Yeah, so it's still Team Angle, Shelton Benjamin, Charlie Haas. Was supposed to be JR, mm-hmm. Los Guerreros.
Yep.
But one Guerrero is gone. Explain.
Well, as we mentioned before, he had a torn bicep. Chavo
yep.
did. On
That's
the
right.
5-1 SmackDown, Team Angle defeated that upstart team of John Walters and Aaron Stevens. After the match, Haas demanded that Los Guerreros return their stolen tag team titles. Eddie and Chavo emerged and returned the belts, but then stole Kurt Angle's medals. A week later, Team Angle recovered the medals as Eddie Guerrero's wrestling Matt Hardy. Later that night, Team Angle wrestled Tajiri and Rikishi, and Los Guerreros took the opportunity to take the medals back. The ensuing week, it announced that the Guerreros would take on Team Angle in a ladder match at the pay-per-view. On 5:15, Shelton Benjamin pinned Eddie, but Eddie got the last laugh when he smashed the Kurt Angle portrait over the head of Shelton. Unfortunately, things got shaken up as Chavo was seriously injured during the tour of the United Kingdom. Despite the creative team knowing about the severity of the injury, Chavo was advertised up until the night of the show. Team Angle claimed that Eddie would have to fight alone or forfeit, but Eddie said he was allowed to choose a mystery partner, and that partner was...
Tajiri!
Yoshihiro Tajiri.
That's right.
Yes. So he's been kind of a little aimless, really, since, what, mid-02 or so?
Yeah, I guess so, during the whole you know, when Tori Wilson had the geisha thing on, that whole storyline.
Yeah, we haven't heard much of him since then. So here he is. And I thought it was a good choice. I thought he fit pretty well with Eddie. And I wasn't really – I mean, I never want to see anyone get hurt, but I wasn't really completely, totally sad that it was Chavo.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's – I don't know. It's Chavo. So, I mean, it wouldn't have been as cool seeing Guerrero's in this match for the titles to finally win it, even though it made more sense for the story. I liked Tajiri being in there better because I liked Tajiri a lot more. And I thought it was an upgrade. When you factor in Chavo being replaced by Tajiri and the ladder step, it's an immediate upgrade of a rematch, even though their match last month was pretty good.
Yes, it was. It was excellent.
I thought Team Angle's swagger continued to build. They still use Angle's music and paying homage. Heat's has transferred over, I thought. It's carried to them.
Mm-hmm.
Put over Eddie Guerrero's ladder experience on commentary, and you get some stiff early action with ladder bumps, some nasty a nasty Shelton power slam of Eddie onto the ladder. Nice teamwork by Team Angle. They use some regular moves with the ladder assistance, which I always like, where they basically just work the ladder into their like normal offensive set. I like when they do that. Eddie and Tajiri were a smooth team. Feels like they've been a team for a while, and they both had huge charisma. I think that was the key. Chavo was kind of a black hole of charisma. I thought Eddie and Tajiri both have like plus charisma, and they really connected with the crowd quickly. Pretty good fight on the ladder with Eddie and Charlie Haas. It led to a couple of sloppy Eddie power bombs throughout, but a nice touch with Tajiri blowing the mist, and I thought it was a really cool finish to a great ladder match. The crowd pops huge at the end for Team Angle finally losing. I thought it was a nice moment and fun stuff. I thought it was a really good ladder match, kind of a forgotten ladder match, and I liked the finish with them both on the ladder. Tajiri pops up and sprays the mist, and Eddie grabs the title. So good match. And, again, kind of a forgotten ladder gem. What did you think of this one?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And I agree with you completely about the whole black hole of charisma. Should we get a Chavo t-shirt of that black hole of charisma? Because there's a promo right before this match. Eddie is interviewing. I forgot who's interviewing him. But Eddie is and Tajiri comes out and he says lie, cheat, and steal in Japanese, which I thought was pretty wild. That was pretty good. Again, most minutes on the card, this match gets 14-18, second longest match after the main event, actually. And it was just no dead spots. I think with Chavo, you would have had a couple of like rolling around kind of thing. No dead spots. I mean, Tajiri, when Eddie needed a spell or he had just done a sequence, Tajiri's just there to throw himself all over the place. So that I think that's what I love the most about this match. No dead spots. Went beginning to end. And I mean, we all have to admit that at this point, Haas and Benjamin are just beasts. I mean, they've done such a great job of kind of settling into this run of facing similar workers, but with different quirks and just coming out with 4-star matches. I mean, superb job by all 4 guys in this match. Definitely a JR, a forgotten gem. I know that there's the 2 ladder match. No, I'm not getting up to my shelf. I know there's the 2 ladder match comps. I'm guessing this one may not be on either of them.
It's on something. It may be Eddie's. I'll check on Graham's.
Eddie would be a good guess. I don't know if it's on either of the 2 ladder comps. I have both of those. I don't think I remember either of them being on it. But it's a great match. Go on the network and check it out. And this show does have the little buttons, so you can go.
It was
right
on ladder match 2, Crash and Burn.
Okay, so it's on the green set. And the little buttons are on that timeline, so just you can go right to it if you don't want to watch the rest of the show. Tremendous match of the night, and Eddie and Tajiri are your new WWE Tag Team Champions.
Mm-hmm.
So the blue belt's back to Eddie, but this time instead of Chavo, the black hole of charisma, it is. It's great now.
The negative space of charisma.
The negative space of charisma. Is
no, and loads of charisma on this team now with
Tajiri absolutely
in the mix. And it was a good use of Tajiri too. A very good match. Yeah.
And no loss, no major loss to Haas and Benjamin. They had to lose the
strategy. And it was a great loss. I mean, they lost to a tough team in a tough match. They killed each other. It was no way. Yeah. And that didn't hurt them one bit. And they go 15 minutes. So,
and they'll stay in the mix.
All right, we head back up to the skybox where Austin continues to gorge Bischoff, stuffing food and beer in his face. Bischoff wants to talk about wanting. He talks about wanting Eddie on Raw. Bischoff's just getting buzzed as Austin makes him continue to chug, not sip. And Austin's still huge over. The crowd's just going nuts for all this. And Bischoff kind of wobbly buzzed was pretty good.
Yes. And he gives him the, I don't know, did he give him the what he called pickles?
No,
at that?
No,
that might have been later on. Yep. Okay.
So then we also go later, elsewhere backstage, Roddy Piper and Chris Jericho have a verbal duel. I thought this was decent, but it felt a little forced. It felt like, all right, you guys are both supposed to be great talkers, and you both have, you know, talk shows, and you're kind of similar. So, all right, have a great promo. And it, I don't know, it felt like they were supposed to be good, and it was funny, but not what I expected out of the two of them.
Yeah, I agree. No, clearly not not as good as not as good as it should have been. Next up, what I think is a in kayfabe and I think in reality, fixing righting a wrong here. I don't think this was just for kayfabe purposes. I think people were legitimately pissed off that this happened. Explain to us, JR, how one of the most time-honored championships in all of professional wrestling returned.
Well, one of Steve Austin's decisions when he became co-general manager of Raw was to undo what he thought was one of the stupidest things Eric Bischoff had done, which is eliminating the honored Intercontinental title. So Austin booked a battle royal for the show with all former IC champions invited, and he also gave a slot to
Hulk Hogan, we got it for you, nigga!
Booker T, because he had a tough year and had almost won the world title on multiple occasions. So we throw the stip out and shit on it immediately, but So, yeah.
I thought of that for a minute. I'm like, I didn't remember the.
They probably could have said nothing and no one would have even noticed.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, when the hell did he, only you know, stat nerds like you and I and a few other people be like, wait a minute, he was never the Intercontinental. What's going on here? But that's okay. It made the match better anyway.
Oh yeah, definitely. So yes, Battle Royal, Steve Austin had made it, and yeah, it definitely was righting a wrong.
Yeah.
A gross wrong when the IC title was eliminated. And you knew it would be back eventually. You knew there was no way that belt was going away forever. So
no,
we had a short run, as we mentioned before. Was it like 211 days?
211 days.
Yep, yep. But it's back.
Yep. I tell you.
All right, John. John Sterling over here.
Yes. I tell you, Susan. one ball and two strikes.
You know, I'll tell you.
I tell you. They're going to be so clueless next year.
Come on, Squat.
Come on, where's Ellsbury? This was fun to watch.
We didn't even talk about who's in it. You're all over the place. So Booker T was the one guy we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Now here are your former IC champs. Goldust, mm-hmm. Chris Jericho, mm-hmm. Kane, mm-hmm. Lance Storm, mm-hmm. popping back up, Test, yep. Rob mm-hmm. Van Dam, and the returning
Val Venus.
Rise with penis.
You've been dying to say that after
the former Chief Morley had been fired by Bischoff backstage on Sunday Night Heat. The former chief was talking to someone. Bischoff walked over to him. Bischoff said, what are you doing here? And he said he's in the Battle Royal. Bischoff said it's only for former champions. And Morley tells him he is right. Chief Morley never was IC champion. And then we find out that he was former champion Val Venus. So here he is. Mm. Him and his yep. penis.
There's a penis. And of course, sitting at ringside, holding the Intercontinental title, is the very first Intercontinental champion, Mr. Pat Patterson.
Using May and Moolah's theme. God, yes. I don't know if that was... It's like anyone over the age of 70 has to answer to this theme. did you think, too, besides just eliminating the mistake of getting rid of the title and writing that wrong, did you think it was also prepping for the solo pay-per-views?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And they knew they needed
another belt. And thus, another belt would be created right. later on, and we'll get to that in a
yeah,
few
moments. I think it was clear they knew they needed more, another hook.
More, more gold, more shimmer.
I like the video package, too. They put over the history of the belt before the
yes.
match.
Yes. No, absolutely. I agree. Good mix of guys here. Test doing double duty.
Did you think the Morley thing was cut too short?
Yes.
I thought there was so much in the tank with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
He had only been around for like 5 months. Chief Morley was 6 months or whatever it was.
Yeah, definitely more to do.
I mean, it was cool seeing Val come out here, but they should have made it like a thing where it was a work, and he comes out as Val for this, just for the pop, and then like almost like that time Boss Man came out, and there was just a setup with him and Vince, and this was just a setup with Bischoff or something, and then he goes back to being Chief Morley. Back to Val, it didn't really fit. I thought Morley was a good upper mid-card heel guy associated with Bischoff. I thought they definitely short of that. So Jericho position is the favorite here, I thought, based on commentary. Pretty strong pool of talent, like you said. RVD gets a good pop still. Christian still clinging to that look, Scott, still refusing to give in. Good spot for Booker, I thought, to win here to rebuild his fading momentum. They all team up and eliminate Kane first, and then he comes back in and wipes everyone out. RVD gets tossed early and bland, and what a shit run for him. Just completely forgotten.
I know. I
mean, he just goes out like immediately for no, just nothing. Just no momentum, nothing behind him. Booker and Goldust, Jericho and Christian are your final four, kind of reigniting that feud from late in 02. Goldust tries to dupe Booker, but Booker catches him and tosses him, but they kind of smile and smirk, still friends. Long two-on-one segment here. Christian then turns on Jericho and dumps him. Jericho gets pissed. Booker and Christian wrestle solo for a while. Then we get a ref bump, which is just absurd in a battle royal. Christian gets dumped. The referee misses it. We get a big pop for Booker. Christian decks Pat, and we get a dusty finish where Christian comes in and throws Booker out, and the ref sees it. I mean, it fit Christian's heel win to be slimy, but I thought it stunk. It kind of felt convoluted with a battle royal. Everyone saw what happened. I mean, everyone. It was plain as day. Like, he was laying on the floor, walking on the floor. It's like his foot touched. And I thought Booker needed the win. I mean, it was a fine battle royal, and I thought it would have made more sense to go with the pop, forget the swerve, give Booker the title, and then you have Christian chase him a little bit.
Yeah, it was almost like you were just about to give Booker a legit consolation prize for what happened at WrestleMania 19, and instead you pretty much just screw him again. I did not like the decision at all. Nice to have the belt back, but you definitely should have given it to Booker. I think this was a perfect chance for him to, you know, get redeemed for what happened in Seattle. So, but instead, Christian, complete with straggly, really bad 2000 hair and the silly singlet, still lingering around there, just looks absolutely dreadful. But I did like the whole Jericho going for the lion heart and he gets pushed out of the ring. I thought that was pretty good.
Lion salt. A
lion salt. I mean, the lion salt and gets pushed out of the ring.
That's
pretty
get
cool.
Corrected.
the lion something.
The lion's death. The
lion's death.
Yeah, I mean, the match was fine. It was okay. But, I mean, Battle Royals are always kind of goofy when thrown together for titles like this. I just didn't care for, I don't know. We didn't need the whole dusty fuck finish and all that here. Just give it to Booker. He needs it. Get the feel-good moment and go from there.
Yeah, exactly. There was no need for all this fucking around. But it was good to see. I was hoping they bring back the old belt, but I guess not. They bring back the Ovaly belt, but that's fine. It's good to have the belt back regardless. So, Christian is your returning WWE Intercontinental Champion. Good to have the belt back. Next, what some people might consider the highlight of the show, if you didn't like the tag team match. We mentioned one of these ladies at Backlash. She was more involved in backstage stuff. We didn't see her in the ring or in... why don't you give us a little background on this?
Oh man!
Yes, I'm sure she was laughing all the way to the sperm bank with this match.
So not much here. Sable and Tori Wilson had been, as you mentioned, just squabbling at Backlash, and Sable challenges Tori to a contest on the 5/8 SmackDown. So that's where we at. Sable versus Tori bikini contest. More TNA. This is much better than the Al Wilson stuff. Sable had been messing with Tori, playing mind games. Tori always comes across as innocent and dumb in these feuds. It's like,
I know.
Yeah, Dawn fucking with her, and now you got Sable's kind of the wily bitch veteran messing with Tori. Lillian sings Tori out, and it's just one of the weirdest entrances. Like, it made it like it should have been hot, but Tori just cannot dance or grind or do any kind of sexy.
No, she looks
gyration.
Like she looks like a 15-year-old trying to do it.
Well, no. I don't know what that looks like, but she, no, it definitely seems very like awkward. Just someone who has no rhythm or movement to do these kind of things. She would not be cashing the ones in a desire. We'll put it that way.
No, no, absolutely not.
A very tepid kind of teasing entrance. It's just, you know, Lillian singing the song that nobody even knows. It's weird.
I know.
And they're trying to be all like sexy about it. So I thought Sable being older and still looking pretty fantastic. I think it looks better now than she did even in 96.
Yes, I agree.
But I thought she out-sexied her. I mean, she's like twice her age. And I don't know, maybe it was the wiles. But I thought Taz was funny as the host here, doing basically a much funnier version of what Jerry Lawler would normally do. Sable was basically fucking naked and really hot. wearing really, really thin string bikinis or bathing suit. Tori's hot, no moves again, has a pretty basic bikini, but then she says, wait, I'm not done, strips down even further and wins with a super thin bikini. Tori plays mind games and kisses Sable on the lips. Pretty big time waster. We get a nice lesbian kiss. Taz was funny. At least both were hot, but I thought Sable got hosed. I thought she clearly won this thing.
Sable does look absolutely amazing. I will most definitely say that. But I tell you,
how old is Sable right now?
Oh, she's got to be in her early 50s by now.
Tomorrow she is just turned 47.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So at the time of this, she was, 36?
36. She looked pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
Doing okay.
So.
Shuddered. I think we are going to look like at 47.
That was 27 years ago. No. You're trying to compare me to Sable?
Yes.
What's the matter with you?
I don't see you in any kind of string bikinis.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
Have Lillian singing you out. something no one knows about.
You sound like Engelbert Humperdinck. And after the loving. This was, I have to say this, though. Sable is pretty hot, I will agree. But if there's anybody in the history of this company that comes even close to Sunny as having the perfect body.
Here comes Tori Wilson. She can't dance. Scott better keep on those fucking pants.
I thought you were waiting for the Triple H domestication. Boom. Where's my coach bag? Left it at Rucker Park. If there's any diva, or I guess that word is used here.
Scolo, put on those red underwear. I need you to come in here and comb my hair. I got a big match with Kevin Nash later tonight. After I beat him, I'll come home, do you right.
Making some dinner. Dun, dun, dun. Casserole in the oven. No.
Just go, those potatoes better be good.
Potatoes.
If not, I'm going to lay down the wood.
I think that clearly next to Sonny, who JR and I have both pretty much said is the hottest woman in the history of WWE. I don't think anybody's got a more perfect body than Tori, though. I mean, she's perfectly proportionate. She may not be able to grind well, but she's got the perfect proportions. She's just the perfect.
Yeah, no, it's hard to argue with that. I mean,
Maurice is close. That's about it, really. I mean. I can't really think of anybody else. She was perfectly proportionate, you know. But yeah, she doesn't have that the desires sachet is what she clearly does not have. But that's okay.
She ain't charging $1.40.
No, she no. No, no.
I'm going to sleep on the recliner once again. Chris Golo's going to carry me to bed. We'll go tit for tat, Chris Golo.
Go mash those potatoes.
You got the tit, I got the tat.
All right. So there you go. So it was a pretty hot segment. Whether you can compare it to the Tori Dawn Marie hotel skit.
That's tough. It's up there.
It's tough. It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
All right.
Back to the skybox.
Two guys look nothing. Oh, okay.
Back to the skybox. Bischoff drunk hits the line of the night. I ain't got a cigarette, but I got a condom in my wallet.
Condom in my wallet. Yes. That's a tremendous line.
Austin keeps forcing Bischoff to eat and drink. Bischoff's getting full. Austin gives him jalapenos and tells him they're pickles. He eats them and then he makes him drink the jalapeno juice to wash it down. I thought it was kind of funny, I thought.
Yeah.
Austin in this role, I thought GMs are becoming too focused as characters. That was my only beef with this. Like, way too much time spent on GMs. And they're feuding with each other, not just running the show. It's just,
right.
To me, that was just a little much. Like, it was fun. They had good interactions. They have good chemistry together. And it's fun watching Bischoff be a goof. But I just thought the focus was so heavy on these two power figures that, it, I don't know, it felt a little bit overboard.
Yeah, I mean, they were literally, this was like their sixth segment or fifth segment on the show. It's a bit much. It's a bit much. All right. This next combination doesn't come close to Sable or Tori, for that matter. Although one of them might be just as bloated in the chest. Why don't you give us a little background on the mysterious masked man and his evil arch enemy as they head to this match?
We got a lot to talk about. So after WrestleMania, Mr. McMahon had sent Hulk Hogan home, saying he'd gladly pay to sit him to make him wait out his deal. Shortly after, mysterious vignettes began airing, advising the impending debut of a new superstar called Mr. America. Stephanie revealed that she signed this new superstar without ever meeting him. On the 5-1 SmackDown, Mr. America made his debut and appeared on Piper's Pit, made his way out with Real American as a theme. It looked kind of like Hulk Hogan with a mask on. Vince came out, threatened to fire him, but Mr. America revealed that he had an ironclad contract, brother. None of this made much sense from Stephanie's perspective. America fought off Vince, Piper, and Sean O'Hare after Vince tried to pull off the mask. A week later, Stephanie confirmed that Mr. America could not be fired, but Vince said if he could prove America was Hogan, he would be able to fire him. Hogan appeared via satellite and denied that he was Mr. America. The next week, Piper called out Mr. America and challenged him to a pay-per-view match. As they argued back and forth, Piper noticed an annoying Hogan fan at ringside. America was defending the fan when Piper and O'Hare attacked him. Before Piper could rip off the mask, the fan hit the ring and saved Mr. America's identity. Piper tackled the kid and pulled his leg, but when he did, the leg was torn off, revealing it was a fake leg. This spooked Piper dead in his tracks and left America and the fans alone, the fan alone. Backstage, Vince ripped into Piper and O'Hare for being so careless. So, during this time, Piper had transitioned from the feud with Hogan to focus teaming. Oh, actually, we'll get to that one in a second. The mysterious one-legged fan was actually independent wrestler Zach Gowen. Gowen had been gaining some underground credibility and ended up with a brief run in TNA with the name Tenacious Z. He soon offered a deal by Dirty and jumped at the chance. He would use his prosthetic leg to get to the ring, but wrestled with it off. And there's actually a funny backstory to his hiring, Scott. We've heard it many times with Kevin Kelly here, a couple times on this show and on his own. There were actually two one-legged wrestlers on the independent scene in 2003, and they originally offered a contract to the wrong one. They sheepishly had to pull back that offer and extend it to Gowen. I think Scott Keith talked about that one, too. So we'll get more into him in a bit. So the match itself here is Roddy Piper and Mr. America.
Mm-hmm.
And as we'll get to in a moment, neither Piper nor Hogan made it to the next pay-per-view. So we'll wrap things up now with this whole mess. On the 5/22 SmackDown, Vince was about to fire Piper for the loss. And O'Hare stepped up and took the blame and challenged Mr. America to a match. Vince said if O'Hare lost, Piper would be fired. And he said if America lost, he had to take a lie detector test. O'Hare would win the match by countout when the fan, Zach Gowen, was hassled by security. The next week, America passed the lie detector test and then humiliated Vince when he hooked himself up to it to test the accuracy. After some more hijinks, Mr. America made his final appearance on the 6/26 SmackDown. He teamed with Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle to lose a match to Big Show, Shelton Benjamin, and Charlie Haas when Show pinned him. And that was set to be their next feud, I think. After the show went off the air, America played to the crowd and lifted up his mask to show his true identity. Later that week, Hogan had some disagreements with the creative team and his payoffs and said he's walking out once again. On the 7/3 SmackDown, Vince showed the footage where he lifted his mask, and that was used as the rationale to fire Mr. America. So after this pretty fun run since 02, Scott, Hogan would now be gone until 2005.
Yes. Yeah, it was a fun run, but I think they got as much in-ring juice out of him as they possibly
could. I liked the Mr. America stuff, though. Like, it was kept out of the main events. It was kind of
the comedy
of SmackDown. Yeah. I thought Hogan camped it up well. I'm curious what they would have done with him and Show and how long they would have kept it going. I don't know. I kind of wish he stuck around a little bit longer. I wish he made it to Mania 20. That's what I kind of wished.
I don't understand what he's bitching about payoffs, though.
I think it's probably the WrestleMania payoff must have been low or something.
Well, how low they expected. I'm sure they made a killing on it.
Well, we mentioned that neither man would make it to the next show, and that's because as Piper moved on from Hogan, began teaming with Sean O'Hare, and they challenged Tajiri and Eddie Guerrero for the tag titles. But before this developed any further, Piper appeared on an episode of HBO Real Sports that focused on the dark side of wrestling, made some inflammatory remarks about the business, and came off quite negative, including his views on WWE. Vince took those comments to heart and fired Piper immediately after it aired. Piper said his comments were taken out of context, but Vince had heard enough, and I'm pretty sure that was taped even before he had returned. I think that's the shit timing for him. Unfortunately for O'Hare, when Piper left, his push did as well. He would spend the rest of 03 on Velocity until he was injured in a motorcycle accident, returned, was sent to developmental, released in April 04, and of course, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, passed away earlier this month. So there's the build to that fiasco. What did you think about Piper and Hogan kind of one last time here?
Oh, it's a disaster. It sucked. Piper doesn't have obviously he has no movements anymore with all the surgeries and motorcycle accidents.
I like the idea of it though. I don't know.
Oh, the idea was fine.
But even Piper, one last time, you throw these guys out in the middle of a pay-per-view, harmless match. I mean, what do they go? 5 minutes? Just under 5 minutes. It's
4:58.
I don't know. It was kind of a fun nostalgia throwback, I thought.
If you want to look at it that way, sure.
They weren't wrestling for the title.
I mean, I also feel that it was more to push Zach Allen than it was the two of them, because he ends up interfering at the end. And after Piper, what happens is Vince gives O'Hare a lead pipe.
Yeah,
and while the referee is interfering, O'Hare comes in, hits Piper by accident. Hogan hits a leg drop, and as he's going for the pin, Vince was going to try and climb into the ring to stop him.
Yeah,
and Zach Allen hops the guardrail and grabs him.
And I thought Mr. America was a decent old school gimmick that kind of fit the feud.
Yeah.
Interesting pit on SmackDown with Zach and Vince using Piper to run Hogan out of the company. Mm. It was cool hearing Real American back in regular use too. So America brings out a chair to start the match so Zach can come sit in it. Piper and O'Hare double team attack him to start, but O'Hare keeps getting involved. I thought Piper looked better here than a Mania, kind of working himself into shape a bit. He needs a tan, but very, very pale. Piper gets an awful, awful sleeper hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Slow motion, but they're trying, and the crowd is digging it. Vince runs the interference, like you said. Deck was stacked. A lot of overbooking. You get the mishap, and again, sloppy mess, but I thought it was quick and harmless, and the crowd seemed to enjoy it, and I thought it was fun for a little nostalgia. And bringing back the old NWA mask gimmick never hurts either.
Well, yeah, anytime you bring a mask, anytime you steal something from Jim Crocker Promotions, it puts a smile on my face. But, I mean, all right, I'll concede that it was, it was in a harmless slot in the car and everything. It was just dreadful. And again, I think it was more suited to push Zach Allen, and I think Vince had the sick kind of dark side of Vince's creative mind. I think he enjoyed feuding with a one-legged person. So I think that's where that all begins, at least here. But the match is just trash. But for the nostalgia purpose of it, I mean, would you call this? I wouldn't call this a trilogy. War to settle the score to Starrcade '96 to this. I mean, but it was. I guess it was. You didn't feel it was cheapened being on like a secondary SmackDown show, or it didn't matter to you. That was just regardless.
No, because that's what the charm was.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I mean, the charm is that we're getting it here. It's in the mid card. No one really cares. It's like they're not main eventing a pay-per-view. It's not taking up a slot at WrestleMania. It's just, it's here. That's why I didn't mind it, because it's 5 minutes on kind of a buried show. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of a cool memory lane kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Well, Mr. America wins, but as JR said, we kind of saw how the rest of the storyline would go, so this pretty much ends it. All right, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we've got 3 matches left, all of them title matches. We have the 2 big title matches and then a triple threat for the women's championship. But first, a word or many, because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week. here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Return the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
want some one-on-one interaction with you, Chris Golo. That animal attraction. Let's talk about placetobenation.com. We got the high spot with Chris Golo. It's usually the G spot, but we'll take it here with Glenn Butler and Steve Willey looking at Roman Reigns, TNA's future, and the top stories of the week. The Seinfeld series rewatch, The Deal. It's where Lane and Jerry talk about having casual sex with each other. Chris Golo, nothing's casual about our relationship. That's great. Check that out. That's the end of season two. It's good stuff there. Hard traveling fanboys, Chris Golo, counting down the top comic movie performances. That's a really cool piece. You know, those guys are hard. I dig that. We talk about all the great movie book characters, comic book movie characters. New Steve Corino show, that jobber. Talk about wrestling what-ifs. That loser Dan McGinn, that creep with the shaved his beard, the pedophile. TJ and Todd's tailgate. I'm all about tailgating you, Chris Golo. Looking at week five here in the college football season. I heard you and your buddy JR did a Vintage Vault revault, refresh, talking WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, they're right.
I see there's a picture of a snake. Very sexual, Chris Golo. I like it. I like your imagery that you're bringing out here on the website. All new fun facts, new opinions and thoughts and match write-ups. That's what you do when I'm working out. And then you get my bath ready. The movies are the place to be generation up to 2002. That's a great year, Chris Golo. It's the year we first met when you were doing radio. I came in for that interview. You gave me a handy in the bathroom. Feeny's flashback, looking at WCW Fall Brawl. I would like to be locked inside a cage with Chris Golo. I know that much. Playing the game like I always have been. Sports Lounge, the cowboy. Ride him, baby. Ride him like a cowboy. Breaking down the NFL. Pro Wrestling Super Show, Greatest Wrestler Ever Project. That's all about me. You better be on there, Chris Golo, debating me, talking about me. Steve Willey previewed some fall TV. And World Cup of Characters, get on there. Vote for that shit. Knockout round four, down to like eight matchups, I think. I'm winning them all. Joseph Feeney looked at Axl Rose, part one. Appetite. I know your appetite, Chris Golo. That feeds you that Wendy's, and then we get down. So check that out. Take a walk around the web with Glenn Butler. Listen to the Bauer Show and get all your Night of Champions stuff right here at PoliceMediation.com. Hey, Chris Golo, if you want to buy me that, let's just say that apparatus on Amazon.com, make sure you head over to PoliceMediation.com. Before you do that, there's a support PoliceMediation, shop, connect, enjoy. That's what we do. And you head over there, click through there, and you give all your love to PoliceMediation.com when you're ordering your gimmicks. So PoliceMediation.com, hit us up, Facebook.com/PoliceMediation. I'm the game. I'm out. Sky, we just got something across on the text machine here.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Willey wants to take a guess at Ryan Schmock's picture. Thinks it's the Dingo Warrior. So we'll see. I know everyone's on the edge of their seats with that one.
I thought it was Haku.
Haku?
Haku?
Maybe it's Sato!
Sato!
That crumbum.
Oh, boy. Wow. I didn't realize we had a new hiring on the Place to Be Pod.
You hot and bothered? Sounds
Place
weird.
To Be Nation mothership. Well, the apparatus is...
It never ends, Chris Golo. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. your apparatus tees will be up there, always wondering what it could have been. Like Ron Renzi said, Brett Hitman hot, before he gets interrupted. We'll never know what he was going to say. We'll never know what your apparatus comment was going to be.
All right. Okay. So this feud, the feud that leads to this title match this evening, dates us back to pre-Backlash. This goes back a while. Of course.
Curious what ends first. You're reading the fun fact or the song? Go ahead.
So Kevin Nash came back from injury after popping his quad at in 2002. And
gotta lube up.
And he realized that things had changed. His buddies were hating each other, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, not best friends any longer. And Triple H pretty much said, him or me. Or me. And Triple
just
H
like,
made
it's like Kelly, Brandon, and Dylan all over again.
Yes. And in the end...
I choose me.
And in the end, Kevin Nash got nutshotted as Triple H said, I will make the decision for you.
This whole thing, this takes on that extra level when the music and the story.
Yes.
The way you're describing it.
So, of course, they had the six-man tag at Backlash. Triple H used the sledgehammer and won the match. So after Backlash, when Triple H used the hammer on his former best friend, Nash had one objective, destroy.
Oh, yeah. He was out for...
the master of the purple tights.
Triple H and Flair actually got a World Tag Team title shot. That was pretty cool against RVD and Kane.
Yes.
But Nash lumbered out and chased Hunter off with the sledgehammer. They went to the back, and Hunter was escaped in a limo as Nash destroyed it with the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
The following week on the highlights reel, Nash and Triple H went face-to-face, but Jericho low-blowed Nash, and they double-teamed him. Nash was able to fight both men off. He and Triple H then brawled outside of the arena in Halifax, Nova Scotia. They brawled into the street. Triple H stole someone's SUV and drove off. The next week, Nash faced Jericho in a match that ended a big schmoz when Shawn Michaels came in as well to help against Triple H's group.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Nash's first pay-per-view title match since losing to Shawn Michaels, a good friend's better enemy, is in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of a mess, right? Odd choice. I mean, I get why they felt like they wanted to go ahead with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they should have. I thought the feud was messed up. I mean, really, this is the best we could do. You could see the disaster coming from Backlash. You could see it coming from Nash hobbling on Raw. And they still go through with putting these two in a singles feud. Hunter's getting a little chubby here. Clean shave's not helping with the pudge. Obviously, letting himself go. We found out that you guys met in 02, and timeline checks out. Had a bloody brawl on Raw to help add some steam. Little steam. HBK was in Nash's corner to offset Flair, and he gets the biggest pop of all of them again. Nash attacks Hunter in the aisle. Flair and Michaels immediately get involved and then fight to the back, so they're gone. Nash dominates early as Hunter bumps and tries to run, and we get the usual Triple H of this whole run here where he bumps early, then he tries to run away, and then he kind of comes back. We get an awful ref bump. Hunter, a low blow, turns a tide. Nash kicks out of a pedigree. Amazing that they do that here.
Yes.
And I think Chad says it in his previewing if you want to get his take on the match as well. That Booker must have been slamming his head against a wall backstage after he had to lay down for 20 seconds and get pinned. Nash kicks out after like two. Hunter gets DQ'd for using the sledgehammer. A really lame match. I mean, the only good thing, like you had said earlier off air, was that it was short. But the lesson obviously had been learned from the Rumble that you couldn't have these guys go out there for 20 minutes. Nash beats down Hunter after the bell. A little heat for Nash. No one seemed to give a shit. He powerbombs Hunter to the announce table, and that was the best part of the feud so far. But sadly, it signals that it's going to continue. And to me, that's amazing that they couldn't audible this and just have Hunter beat him clean and end it. Like, the fact that they thought they could do this again for another month is just obnoxiously stupid.
Well, considering what gimmick they would use...
Yeah, I don't care. You can't defend this one.
Okay, let's just listen to Madonna. Keep pushing my love. Apple.
Is it? Oh, go ahead. I mean, defend it. I don't see how you can...
What I'm saying is I think... It's good. It's good that it was 7 minutes.
Because in heaven,
another
mustard milk,
mustard milk. Igor Scolo, mustard milk with tomato.
Oh, we get to watch that next weekend.
Oh, that's right. You found it again, right?
It's on the tape.
Excellent. Oh, that's right. Yes. So.
Jolter.
God, I'm so looking forward to next weekend. The only thing I'm saying it is, you knew, and I've been saying this the whole time. You know the end game here. You know the guy that's going to end it and they just needed to milk it a little longer. So knowing what gimmick they were going to use at the next pay-per-view could have utilized Kevin Nash's strengths, which was not speed or swiftness. Screw it. Throw 7 minutes out there, you know, do whatever the fuck they want, and then move on to the next show. So that's all I'm saying. For once, they realized,
yeah,
this can't be the headline match. We've got a much better title match to headline this show. These two will have a different kind of match at the next pay-per-view. Just give them 7 minutes to fuck around and move
no,
on.
No, give them no minutes, because Nash has looked like shit, and they're trying, like, awful headlining feud of Raw. You got Shawn Michaels out there, who's been putting on great match after great match since his return, out-popping the world. You got Booker T, red hot as a face, now buried. RVD is just being treated like shit. And you got these two freaking jackasses out there. Hunter clearly not the same that he was. Clearly bloated. And in these weird feuds where he's trying to do this poor man's Ric Flair, where he's getting beat up the whole match, but it's not believable because Nash looks like a grandfather out there, hobbling to the ring, stumbling around. It's just, it's embarrassing. I mean, you watch this shit you're seeing on SmackDown, you know, Hogan and Piper aside, but I'll argue they were moving better than these two guys were. I mean, you're watching the world's greatest tag team, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit. You're looking at all these other guys, Spanky, anyone. And then you watch this clusterfuck for the world title. Awful. Just an awful decision. This made no sense. And Nash is heatless. No one cared. He would have been better off just coming back as Hunter's bodyguard. Put him in that new group that
come
they
back
wanted
as Diesel?
Yeah, why not? Better than this bullshit. Mm. Kevin Nash in 2003 should not be your top face challenging for the world title.
You're probably right.
No, I know I'm right. It's not probable. It's not questionable. It's not doubtful. I'm playing, baby.
How many Triple H Shawn Michaels title matches did you want?
Like better than this?
That they milked it. You couldn't have him and Shawn every month.
I would have if this is our option.
Blame Goldberg. I'm going to defend that till the day I die.
Well, they should have had fucking Goldberg win now instead of building to a meaningless nothing that happens later.
If he wins tonight, imagine if he, instead of The Rock, he come out the night after WrestleMania. Just be
that, yeah, do that. There you go.
That I would have.
Now you're doing something.
Nah, I'd have been in favor of that. I don't think he's... Well, I'm not getting into physiques. I've already dug myself too. Actually, I didn't even do anything wrong tonight, and I feel like I've been dug into a hole.
I like his heel sausage.
Come on, Grandpa Nash. No. No, it was smart to only have these guys at 7 minutes, but considering what the end game was, I don't know. At least it wasn't last. That's all I could say. There's the consolation. At least it wasn't the main event, and it wasn't longer than 7 minutes.
Sadly, we're not done with these two idiots. So we go back to the skybox where Eric Bischoff, stuffed and sick, throws up all over the waitress, throws up on the fans outside the window, and Austin then douses him with beer, and that wraps up that story for the night. So Bischoff thoroughly humiliated, and I felt bad for those fans that got spit on when he puked out the window.
Even if it was fake. It's yeah, just so gross.
Pretty gross.
All right. Next up, another title match on the line. Howard. WWE Women's Championship on the line. This a fatal four-way.
Ah.
Our champion, the female member of Thuggin' and Buggin', and then, of course, Jazz.
Is victorious.
Taking on former champion, Trish Stratus. Former champion, Jacqueline. Former champion, Victoria.
He's coming at you!
And he did.
I want to puke watching that fucking main event bullshit match.
Get us to this feud, JR. How do we get to this match?
After Trish's loss to Jazz at Backlash, the night after Raw, she asked Eric Bischoff for a rematch. Bischoff said she must defeat him in a match to get it. It was a no DQ match thanks to beatdowns by Victoria and Jazz. Bischoff got the pin. The following week, Austin was in charge. Trish got her rematch with Jazz that night, and it ended with Jazz winning via a belt shot, Victoria interference. The following week, Trish defeated Victoria in a hardcore match.
Really wasn't crazy about this match either.
He's gonna puke!
I didn't puke, but it was definitely not as good as you would expect from four pretty decent workers.
Yeah.
I was disappointed.
It was okay. I mean, tough spot. I was shocked that Jackie was still around.
Yeah, that kind of took me by surprise, too. I forgot she was there when it came out today.
And I'll give the crowd credit. I mean, they hung with this thing, even though it's, I mean, it's really tough spot after that thing put everyone, you know, that thing before this put everyone to sleep. And then before our main event. So Jazz still going strong with Teddy. Women's division feels a little thin here. Feels like it's kind of bottomed out just a little bit again. Victoria and Trish brawl with Victoria taking Trish out on the floor, slides in and takes over. Jazz gets a nice angel wing slam on both of them. rough stuff with the sign of the crowd. Jazz is a bad man. That made me laugh. I didn't feel good about it. Jazz hooks a good STF on Trish while Jackie gets a half crab on Victoria. Both survive. Victoria dumps Trish to the floor in a nasty-looking spot. Trish landed right on her face and ended up busting her lip. Jazz with a nice splash to break up a pin. DDTs and gets hits a DDT for the win to retain. Solid women's match. Good pacing, I thought. I liked it better than you, I guess. Things really picked up at the end with Jazz being quite dominant.
That's probably what the main highlight was, is that Jazz, again, showed her the fact that she was
victorious.
Really rocked into the locked into the title, and everybody else was just following behind her. So I guess this was her moment. But I just thought the match was a little chopped up and kind of gross. But okay, Jazz retains your women's championship.
He's gonna puke!
And boy, did he. Boy, do I feel bad for those people. The combination of beer and wings and pickles and jalapenos.
Sounds
and
like
whatever.
Last Sunday for me.
Yes. Oh, yes, the 15-hour... boy, Matt must really love you now. There's probably nothing left in the kitchen now. Okay. Time for our main event. The WWE Championship is on the line. Your champion is still...
Flash.
Yes. Brock Lesnar! Because this is a Rocket Buster, Cole!
Rocket Buster show, stop off the chain, off the hook! Watch out, Joe!
It comes to pain! Brock taking on in a rematch from a couple of pay-per-views. Of course, they met
Buster's
at Survivor
Rocket.
Series. And met again
rocket,
at the
Chris Golo.
Met again at the at the Royal Rumble. How did we get to this point, though, JR? Between
after nearly
Brock Lesnar and the Big Show,
murderizing Rey Mysterio. Backlash. Big Show continued on his Cruiserweight Killer tour on SmackDown. On 5-1, Brock came out and called out Show for being a bully. Even offered to put the championship up to get revenge for his fallen friend. And the next week, Lesnar announced that he wanted the pay-per-view contest to be a stretcher match, playing off Rey's injury at Backlash. Later that night, Show defeated Chris Benoit. After the match, Show and A-Train beat down Benoit till Lesnar made the save. Show was able to take out Brock and leave him lying to end the show. The next week, Rey was discussing his injury backstage in an interview when Show came in and kidnapped him. Brought him to the ring with a stretcher, but Rey was able to fight him off. Show beat him down until Lesnar made the save. Brock beat on Show with a stretcher and put him down with an F5. The announcers made it clear that they thought Show couldn't lose, though, because he was too big to fit on the stretcher. And Scott, this is the first stretcher match in pay-per-view history for the WWF. That match debuted on August 19th, 1967. 35 years later, we get the first pay-per-view one. Do you know what the first stretcher match was? The WWF, first WWF stretcher match.
I do.
On that day.
1967?
August 19th, 67. Place in Philadelphia.
I'm going to say Bruno Sammartino.
Yep.
Defending the WWF Championship against Classy Freddie Blassie.
Gorilla Monsoon.
Wow. Speaking of big guys on a stretcher.
Yep. So total now, there have been 60 stretcher matches all told. Andre the Giant versus Killer Khan is probably the most well-known one. I'm guessing that's where you were originally headed.
I was, at least at 67.
That was an extra on this DVD, actually. One of the
first times
they started doing that. Yep. Andre was one of the two referees for a stretcher match between Sammartino and George Steele in Philly on 9/20/75. So,
wow.
Stretcher fun facts there for you. Main event time, Scott. So, Show position is to bully Brock to the rescue. I thought his face run started to sputter a little bit. Still really good in the ring.
He got good pops on this night, though, I thought. No?
He did. He feels like he's spinning his wheels just a bit, though. Amazed because Big Show doesn't feel legit as a challenger as much anymore. Good chemistry. They pay off Brock's Survivor Series loss. Good gimmick choice. First time in 17 years. Brock uses a stretcher board to whack Show around early. A little choppy early, but Brock uses the stretcher as weapon, too, just like Show was. Show takes over and puts Brock down, but Show takes some time to figure out what's the best way to get Brock to the stretcher. Most of the match was battling around ringside. We get a nice bump where Big Show pushed off the apron and bounces off the stretcher. Brock goes to the back while Show's recovering, and then Rey jumps him, making his return. Brock comes out with a forklift, runs off the top of it, and hits a flying clothesline in an awesome spot. The crowd's going nuts. Really cool visual there. Brock is all fired up, and you get an energetic assault. The crowd is rocking. He hits an F5, rolls Big Show into the forklift, and drives him across the line. I thought this was really a fun match. A lot of energy and chemistry. These guys work really well together. I thought it was a nice win for Brock. The only downside was not a lot of drama to this one, because you knew Big Show wasn't winning again. He wasn't beating Brock Lesnar again.
Right.
But the match itself was a lot of fun. Like, it could have really been a dog since everyone knew Brock was winning. And when you look at who it is and the stip, this really could have fell flat. But I thought they made it work. And again, they have really good chemistry together.
Yeah, and I thought it was very inventive. I thought a lot of the spots in this match you didn't really expect. The forklift was certainly a kind of an ingenious concept. I think Ray being involved in the storyline helped a lot. I think because he's such a, still a very hot character at this point, very sympathetic. I think the fans flocked to it. And I think you can almost say, JR, and I wouldn't say this is much of a stretch, that Brock was kind of siphoning some of Ray's face heat, and it worked. I thought the crowd was pretty hot for him, but you're right. I think as a face, he was just kind of bouncing from feud to feud and there wasn't anything really. Do you think even with all this talent on SmackDown, they were missing Kurt?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I feel like they could move things around a little bit. Like we talked about Benoit kind of being buried a bit and Kurt not being there. It feels like they're a little thin up top. You know, we saw Cena forced up there. They're trying to kind of keep Taker away from him for now. So it's just, they feel a little thin with challengers for Brock. Like, I'm surprised they didn't try and go to the old tag team. Well, you know, sometimes when they have no challenge, like Ultimate Warrior 1990 and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But it was a fun match. Longest match of the night, just under 15 and a half minutes. Did not feel that long, I'll be honest. It didn't feel that long.
No, it went by quick.
Yeah,
a lot of energy. Brock was just full of energy at this point. And then that dive off the forklift was pretty great.
Yes, it was pretty great. And then, of course, he wheels Big Show on the forklift across the line. So the Brock Lesnar retains his WWE Championship with a win over the Big Show in the stretcher match. Kind of funny that we are at a champion who 11 years later still is, which is pretty funny, too. So there you go. There's a Judgment Day. They feel like they went off the air very quick. It's like, Brock wins.
Bye.
What a match. Bye. It's like really very abrupt.
I mean, it was a fine show. I mean, nothing completely stand out. The tag ladder match is really the match of the night. The main event's pretty good. As awful as Nash Triple H was, like you said, it was quick. Fine show. Not offensive. One of those ones where if you paid for it, you probably, can't say you completely got your money's worth, obviously. But
no.
I think watching it back now, I enjoyed it enough to say it's maybe worth a rewatch, maybe one of the more enjoyable shows of what will become a weird stretch. So,
would you say it's a notch above Holiday Slam Fest?
No, nothing is.
Okay. March Madness.
That's the weakest of the WCF pay-per-views.
I know. That's why I said that.
All right. So, Scott, we got a couple of announcements. Let's talk about what's coming up here on The Place to Be. Mm-hmm. And I was also thinking maybe we could reveal our next interview guest.
I think that'd be a tremendous idea.
All right. So, we'll be back Tuesday night this week. No Monday show. Back on Tuesday with a live watch of Raw's March 29th and April 5th. We will have the usual crew with us, and that will be Roger Morissette. That will be Steve Willey. And actually, I don't know if Chad's going to be with us or Jordan. We got to figure that out. So next Wednesday, Kevin Kelly's show on the main event, episodes 19. Not sure on the KK guest yet. Main event, we got lined up. We got the four.
Yeah, we'll stick with the core four this week. I'm trying to like rotate between the core four and then have any guests. But got a lot of popular love for Nate Milton. So the Godfather's on our permanent special guest list. So that was a good episode. But be the core four this week. We'll talk a little Night of Champions, but mostly things going on the last couple weeks. A little build for Hell in a Cell, and this Austin news is something needs to be discussed. So.
And you will discuss it. So then we'll be back October 6th for our usual Monday slot, and that'll be our next big interview, Scott. And now, for those avid listeners of the Kevin Kelly Show, which I know there are many, Mm-hmm. You heard us talking to Dr. Tom Pritchard last week, and Dr. Tom was a fantastic guest. He went like 40-something minutes on that show.
45 minutes.
Yeah, 45, 50 minutes.
Yeah, it was
and
excellent.
He just talked about getting into the business, like in the early territory days. So a lot of extra room there to mine, Scott, and we are going to take a hammer to it and mine away. So
right.
Dr. Tom's going to join us, me and you, and what we're going to do is we're going to pick up where he left off on Kevin's show.
Okay.
So we're not going to talk about all. We're not going to rehash what he went over with Kevin. So if you want to hear that, you go back, listen to the Kevin show, come back to us. We're going to pick it up with the end of his territory days. We're going to talk all about his time with WWF. We're going to talk about all about his time at WCW. We're going to talk about some of his, you know, Memphis and USW, like all that shit for Dr. Tom. And he knows a lot. And if you didn't listen to the Kevin Kelly show when he was on there, he did. He played a game of sleaze start, true or false.
Yes, yes, he did.
So he's a lot of fun with that stuff. So we'll probably pepper some of those questions, and he likes answering that stuff. So, Dr. Tom Pritchard here on The Place to Be, October 6th, and then that Wednesday, Scott, October 8th, we'll be doing Bad Blood 2003. So those are your next couple weeks here at The Place to Be. Visit us at placetobenation.com, Facebook, Twitter, all the spots. Thank you, as always, for your support. Please hit that Amazon link if you get to buy anything.
Mm-hmm.
Always appreciate that as well. Scott, you know what month it is in a couple days? October.
Mm-hmm.
Only one October. So that means we got our Halloween music debuting tonight. Hope everyone enjoyed that. And that's it. Anything else from you?
Coming up this Monday, the next episode of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, Kyle Forchetti will join the Doctor and I to go over NFL Week 4 and preview Week 5, and then Joel Barnhart will join us to talk about the wrap-up of the regular season, preview the postseason, and of course with the Doctor, we'll a little reflection on the captain as well. So, that'll be on Monday.
All right, looking forward to that. So that's it. We're out. We'll talk to you on Tuesday night, live Raw with the crew. Till then, everyone have a great weekend.
Tell me what it's like when you're rubbing that bomb on my leg. Didn't realize he was now hired to do
I guess
do
so.
Bumps and ads.
Yeah. Too bad he didn't have that Sean Mooney music playing. That would have been cool.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. But I don't think he could pimp jean jackets as good as Barry Dudinsky.
No. Or go to war like France. What? It was burning in my room like an oven. My bed soaked with sweat, and man, I was bugging. I checked the clock, it had stopped at 12:30. It had melted, it was so darn hot, and I was thirsty. I went downstairs to grab some juice over a coat, flipped the TV off, and then I almost choked when I heard this awful voice coming from behind. It said, man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. Broke outside in my drawers and screamed so long, cuz got halfway up the block, I calmed down and stopped screaming. Then thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. I figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad Fresh Prince, but Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said, here's what we'll do. We got a lot of work here, me and you. The souls of your friends, you and I will claim. I said, yo, Fred, I think you got me all wrong. I ain't partners with nobody with nails that long. Look, I'll be honest, man, this team won't work. The girls won't be on you, Fred, your face is all burned. I pat him on the shoulder, said, thanks for stopping by. Then I opened up the door and said, take care, guy. He got mad, drew back his arm and slashed my shirt. I laughed at first and thought, hold up, that hurt. It wasn't a dream, man, this guy was for real. I said, Freddy, how's been an awful mistake here? The words, and then I darted upstairs, crashed through my door, then jumped on my bed, pulled the covers up over my head, said, oh, please do something with Fred. He jumped on my bed, but through the covers with his claws, tried to get me, but my alarm went off, and then silence. It was a whole new day, I thought. I wasn't scared of him anyway, until I noticed those rips in my sheets, and that was proof that there had been a nightmare on my street. Come on, Jeff, answer! Come on, man.
Hello?
Jeff, it's Prince, man. Jeff, wake up. Jeff, wake up.
What do you want?
Jeff, wake up, man. Listen to me, Jeff.
It's 3 o'clock
Jeff,
in the morning.
Listen,
what
Jeff,
do you
would
want?
You listen to me? Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Man.
Jeff, listen to me.
So,
don't
so.